CQ, and welcome to Ham Radio and More. I'm your host, Len Winkler, KB7LPW, along with my co-host today, the Professor.
Ned Stearns, AA7A.
So you know what that means when the Professor is here. Any question is open game because the Professor is Mr. Know-It-All. Not all, but you know a lot.
Let's stick with radio.
About radio. Well, of course, that's what we're talking about. I mean, you have been a ham since?
Oh, geez, you're catching me off guard here. Since 1963.
That's 20. That's a long time. Yeah, I didn't know you were that old. And you don't look that old. And but anyway, so it's Rad Chew Open Lines because it's the first Sunday of the month, and actually, it's the last Rag Chew Open Lines that we're going to have. So today's the day to really rag and chew with both of us, and especially with the Professor. Our phone number is area code 602-678-1234. 602-678-1234. Now, obviously, with our phone number being so easy to remember, which, you know what? I got to do something really quick. So, guys, I got 3 seconds, and you're not going to hear anything, but for 3 seconds, hold on one moment. There we go. Now, 602-678-1234. I had to prime the phone. Yeah. 602-678-1234. Now, we don't answer the phone until you go on the air. So therefore, since we don't answer till you go on the air, there's no extra cost. I mean, you're not going to sit there on hold forever. Now, we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about on Rag Chew Open Line. If you have a question about shortwave receivers, we discussed that actually last month in great detail. If you want to talk about the current state of amateur radio, if you want to talk about DXing, you have a few countries confirmed on in DX. Tell me, all but one.
I've worked all the countries that are, except North Korea, that got on the air slightly a few years ago, and I wasn't one of the 8 people in the world who worked them. So I've worked all the other countries but that one.
Okay, so is there any chance that North Korea will get back on the air? Are people working on it?
Yeah, I mean, the attraction is there. I mean, if you could be part of the first crew that puts that on in a big way, you'd be remembered forever, and a lot of people have that desire to be remembered forever. So.
Well, now North Korea, you know, I don't know if they can hear our shortwave broadcast or not, but I live in Florida. No, but in North Korea, it's not exactly the U.S. most friendly nation.
No.
And I'm not sure that they're the friendly nation to that many other countries. However, they're also not what I would call financially solvent either.
No, it's one of the poorest countries. The inhabitants of that country probably have more important things to do than ham radio. They have to, you know,
right, but
make
I'm
an
thinking,
existence somehow.
Okay, there's approximately 3 million or 3.5 million licensed hams throughout the world. Let's say of that 3.5 million, a million and a half to 2 million have HF privileges, or maybe even a little more than that. Every one of those 2.5 million people would love to have North Korea as a confirmed country.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, as long as they have stamps and they can mail it back and forth. Well, why couldn't the North Korean government permit this as a revenue thing? Now, I know it's not supposed to be done, but that's in the United States, it's not allowed to be commercial ham radio.
Not at all.
But in North Korea, the government can say, okay, we're going to do this, but for every confirmation, it's going to cost $20. They make $100 million or $50 million.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't, and those cards wouldn't count. You're not supposed to. It's against the rules to elicit financial remunerations for QSO cards.
Yeah, but it's done every day.
Somewhat. No, there are some managers who do require green stamps for return call, return replies, but or IRCs, but they prefer green stamps. The idea, I think the big goal would be to encourage the amateur radio as a way of making contact as you know, as human to human.
Right, but
you
I
know,
think
make friends with people there as opposed to just having a SWAT team run in, jump in, parachute in, make contacts, and skulk out. That kind of goes against the grain of what you're trying to do with amateur radio.
Well, sure, because one of our doctrine says to create international goodwill. Right. However, I think for the reason that you said we should do it is the exact reason North Korea won't do it, because they're not looking to be goodwill to the rest of the world.
No, they're a bit, well, you know, they've been at war for quite a long time, and they view anybody walking around with radios as being someone suspect. So at the moment, they really don't have a way to allow that kind of activity and maintain their form of control over their populace. So it's going to take quite a while before their government finds a way to do that. Now, there was an initial operation about, it's been about 2 years ago now, and it was the end result of a couple of years of work from a couple of gentlemen from Japan. And it was sort of just a demonstration. They made eight or nine contacts, and one or two of them were set up or pre-established at a particular time. And they took a half dozen other calls, and then they had to shut down the operation, demonstration complete.
The government came and closed.
Well, they were there. They were monitoring the whole operation. So it caused a big brouhaha. Everybody was saying, you know, that it was all staged, and here it was, a legitimate operation from a new country, and eight people made it, and those eight people, the only eight that could possibly be on the number one spot on the honor roll, and none of them were in the United States, and it caused quite a bit of dissatisfaction amongst at least those that used to be on the top rung in the honor roll.
Were those eight all from Japan?
No, I believe there's some, one or two from Europe.
Oh, okay.
So
happened to be turning the dial, and they heard North Korea. What is the call sign for North Korea?
P5.
P5.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If I'm turning the dial and I hear P5,
it's a pirate. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Especially with your setup here, if you were P5, I'd be really surprised.
Well, I have an ICOM 735.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's that antenna I saw laying over your roof.
Well, that's because I want to be horizontal.
Horizontal polarized.
Yeah, polarized. Yeah. So, anyway. This is your show, 602-678-1234, 602-678-1234, and we'll be happy to take your calls. Obviously, you call early. We can spend as much time on the phone that you want. So, you know, if you have your questions and they're kind of intricate, how about putting up an antenna, putting up a tower? You have a little problem with grounding. I know KY7... You're not hearing?
No, I'm sorry.
KY7 Mike Lee called me about a week or two ago. I know he was putting up a new tower and he was getting it delivered. Unfortunately, I couldn't help him that day. But, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, what do I do? You know, now that I want to put up the tower, or how much concrete, or do you think it's a good idea if I ground my 150-foot high tower and I live on top of a mountain, you know, and it rains every day? I mean, would you suggest grounding? And how can I relieve the TVI that I'm causing on my neighbor's television set? All these things are fair game, and we'll be happy to discuss with you if you want to call in at 602-678-1234. Now, today's show is sponsored in part by MFJ Enterprises, Ken Nichols of Earnhardt Auto Mall, and Amateur Radio Trader Magazine. I need to tell people, and I think that it's important to give this out, and this is the first time it's going public, is that October the 26th, that's Sunday, October 26th, three weeks from today, is going to be our last show for Ham Radio and More. I've told you in the past, we've done this show since April, I believe, 21st, 1991. So it is, quite a while. And other than MFJ Enterprises, Amateur Radio Trader Magazine, and a few others, Ken Nichols, of course, of Earnhardt, not a whole lot of support in the industry. It lasted 6.5 years, and such is life. And we had a lot of good shows. They're all up on the Internet. In fact, courtesy of Real Audio, courtesy of Tapper and Real Audio, You can hear our shows there at www.tapper.org. And I did need to make an announcement, I forgot. For Tapper, they asked me if I would do this, so I'm going to do it. I have to look up again where it is, and then here it is. All right. The DCC, they're having a digital communications conference. I believe it's in Baltimore on October 10th through the 12th, so it's next week. And if you want more details about it, it's going to be with the ARRL and Tapper is together. You can go to www.tapper.org/DCC. Again, www.tapper.org/DCC. And that's going to be the special conference that they have. And it's always a very good conference. In fact, if you're into digital communications, that's really where it's at. I don't think there's another group that's as strong as Tapper with digital communication.
No, that's pretty much the cream of the crop there. I'm going to miss that. I'll be at the wearable computer, the IEEE Wearable Computer Conference up in Cambridge, Mass. Starting Sunday.
Wearable computer conference.
Yeah, that's getting pretty interesting these days. Yeah, you know, why get homebound with your computer on your desk? I mean, walk around with your computer, have your heads-up display.
Now, you mean like wearing a visor and the screen is on the visor, or your glasses, your Dick Tracy wristwatch?
Yeah, that one's not quite as neat. They have a couple of interesting displays. One is it actually projects into your eye, so you don't even need to have a screen in front of you, but it projects it and it forms an image on your retina.
Now, has there been? Wait a minute. Has there been much testing for health hazards?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's well below the, yes, it's been tested quite a bit, quite thoroughly. It's very low levels, because of the fact that it doesn't have to compete with a lot of other light, you know, you can be talking about very low levels.
Really?
So lots of interesting stuff. So,
have you done this?
I've viewed it, yes. I've seen the equipment.
But you haven't been a guinea pig on it.
Yeah,
you have.
Me personally, no, but I've talked to many others who have worn the equipment, and it is pretty fascinating.
This is similar to like you would think of going and with the three-dimensional VR. It's further than that.
It's different than that.
Virtual reality.
Virtual reality is more where the image is in your head. Whereas this is actually projecting an image as if it was in a screen in front of you. It would look just like you're watching a TV that's hanging out in space 3 foot away from you or something like that.
But it could conceivably be done as a hologram somehow where it's three-dimensional and you could be in it.
They may be able to come up with a way of having stereo images, one in each eye, and then it would look holographic. But that would be kind of interesting. But you got to realize you got to walk around with this thing. The whole idea is to... Like if you're aircraft maintenance and you don't want to carry manuals around with you, but you want to be able to see something you're trying to repair, you could have a CD or access to some wireless network, access to the actual images, and see what you're supposed to do without having to page through a book or something like that. It's kind of or doing stock control, you're working in some very large warehouse, you know, you can have, you can, you know, scan, you know, having automatic scanning of the item and then have images, you know, textual-based images thrown up at your eyes so you can see what you're doing. Now, all this stuff to improve productivity so you don't have to be desk-bound or have a computer at your desk that you have to go to. So lots of neat stuff. So I'm sorry I'll miss that conference.
But I don't want to go to a Tapper conference. I want to go to yours.
I've been sitting here trying to figure out how ham radio could benefit from something like that. It'd be kind of interesting.
Well, ham radio needs something. 602-678-1234. And that's not sour grapes because I enjoyed doing this for 6.5 years. All right, let's go to the phone. 602-678-1234. Who do we have, and where are you calling from?
Yeah, good morning. Good afternoon, Len. This is Paul down in Van Alstine, Texas, K1PKZ.
How you doing, Paul?
Here. Good to hear you, Ned, again, and I have an unusual one for you. I'm one of these very fortunate people that lives, and this may be off the beaten path a little bit, but I live basically on a flood control lake. And
Okay.
For HF, of course, this is wonderful as far as grounding and whatever. I'm just thinking maybe it would be so great since we own some of the lakefront property here, to be able to put an antenna on or in the water and maybe use the lake as an image plane. I've just never done anything like that. I wonder if you have any thoughts and maybe as to how they do that in marine circumstances to take advantage of the marvelous image plane capabilities of a lake of that size it'll give me a little bit better image plane.
And maybe he can tap into an electric eel as it's flying.
That
might even help a little.
Problem too for a while, wouldn't it?
Oh, geez.
What do you think, Professor?
Well, I'm not going to talk about the eel, but the idea of having a very good conductivity on the ground is essential for, as you said, for creating an image, which is the real way that verticals work. The quarter wave vertical. Over a perfect ground plane, you're actually getting the other half of a dipole as a result of a virtual image created by the ground. Now, for horizontal antennas, it has a different effect. It will act as it will cause a reflection off of the conductive surface, and you'll get kind of this vertical lobing effect. So if you had antennas very low to the ground with good conductivity, you'd get a high angle lobe, and you wouldn't get good low-angle radiation patterns. So for vertical antennas, it would be just super, Paul.
Yeah, so in other words, if I put up a horizontal antenna and got it way up in the air, it would be an ideal thing.
Yeah, it actually doesn't help that antenna so much as it does the vertical. It's not as important. To get the really low angle, you actually would like to be in free space, so it would have a perfect symmetrical radiation pattern. But the closer you bring it to the ground, the more you get this But, you know, it's like taking a balloon in space, and you try to smush it onto the ground, and it starts to, you can't radiate into the ground, so the energy was headed that way gets reflected up.
Well, I'm thinking, too, of the mechanical problems. You know, if I could put this thing on a float of some kind,
so that
if the water level went up and down, it would go up and down. I don't want the antenna itself to get into the water, obviously.
Oh, I know. There's been a lot of work on it. There's a thing called a Brewster angle, which is the... kind of the measure of the theoretical lowest angle of radiation that you can achieve with a vertical. I know guys who are out in these on ships or on islands out in the middle of nowhere, doing just like what you say. In fact, even laying the radials out into the surf, get outstandingly good low angle radiation because of the fact that there's such good conductive surface to carry, the currents, the RF currents.
The problem is I may have to run 100 feet of coax or so.
Yeah, down to it, yeah. And if it's, and something I know from out here in Arizona, anytime there's water involved, there's alchemy, chemistry, rust, oxidation. So you got to worry about the effects of having too much water nearby.
At least not seawater.
Yeah,
that would be salt spray. Element somehow or something to protect.
You can. You know, this they have this joint compound. This what they call aluminum oxide conductive grease that you can help to maintain contacts between at least aluminum.
Yeah, once corrosion down.
Yeah, and avoid dissimilar metals like iron and aluminum and a number of other dissimilar metals. You'll set up these little batteries.
So
which
have oxidation.
Yeah, well, it'll corrode.
A little bit of stray detection all over the place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's something to avoid as well. You don't want your antenna to be kind of a broadband dipole or broadband radiator. That'll happen if you have corrosion in contacts. You'll set up little diodes and rectify your RF and get into everything.
Right. Well, I really appreciate your thoughts on that, Ed. Thanks very much.
Okay, Paul.
Thanks, Paul, for calling.
My pleasure, gentlemen, and very 73.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and our phone number is 602-678-1234. I know that the phone, the other lines were ringing, and obviously I pick you up and you go on the air. So if we're talking to one, you just got to let it ring and ring and ring, and then we'll grab you and put you on the air. So 602-678-1234. That is an interesting...
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's fun. I love playing with antennas, and I gave a tour of my antenna farm just yesterday. A guy came over. I've got 27 antennas out in the backyard, which are all working this weekend. I spent some time on some of them yesterday, but they're all back online.
27 antennas.
Yeah, that's right. You ought to see the, it's about an 8-inch diameter wad of cable coming in from the antenna farm. Yeah, but you need that. You're doing what I do. So, in fact, last weekend I had a lot of fun on the RIDI, CQ Worldwide RIDI contest. And I'll tell you, that's something that's really catching on, is HF digital communication is really picking up steam.
But they won't let certain groups of hams.
Well, they ought to, you know. Okay.
Whoa, you heard it here first. AA7A says that tech pluses should be able to use digital on the HF band.
Sure, yeah. Well,
see, look at that.
It could use some help. It was all teletype, which is about all you can do in a contest. I know that they allow any digital mode contact, but it would take you all weekend to do a packet contact, and so instead I made about 800 contacts on RIDI. So
800?
Yeah.
Over the world?
All over the world, yeah, right. I worked Reunion Island, Mayotte.
How many different countries?
Oh, 106 different countries.
Okay, so you worked, I want people to hear, you worked 106 countries in 2 days.
Yeah, on RIDI.
On RIDI.
Right.
Did you hear that, guys? All there out there sweating and not able to do DXCC on whatever mode. Here he's done it. The professor did it in 2 days on RIDI, of all things.
Yeah, well, you know.
But you have, now how many, just out of curiosity, you're putting out, what, 10 watts?
I have an alpha, not an alpha. I wish I had an alpha. I have a Henry 4KD, which puts out 1,200 watts on some bands.
1,200 watts.
Yeah, now that one band that put 1,200 watts on, it was 80, and I did actually have to go out and put the fire out on the antenna at one point in time, but it wasn't too bad.
And you were feeding what kind of an antenna?
It was a vertical.
All vertical.
Yeah, right. It was it's a shortened vertical, but it does okay.
How high off the ground?
It's on the ground.
It's
only 46 foot tall, and 46. I have a base or linear loaded. So, and the insulator caught fire there somewhere in the middle of the contest.
Well, when you run 1,200 watts, okay. And what do we have on the air?
Am I going to be the only caller?
I don't know.
I hope not. This is AA7ZM. My name is Joe, and I am living in New England at this point.
Well, Joe, you're not the only caller. We had Paul a few minutes ago.
Well, you know, we have two cordless phones in this house. I can't find either of them, so I had to go to a corded phone where there, of course, is no radio, so I can't hear the show.
Oh, well, we had Paul from Texas a minute ago, and, you know, what happened was interesting because when Paul was talking, our other lines were ringing. And then then of course, you know, I guess after like 25 rings, the operator disconnects you or something.
Yeah, but you get that overflow, busy signal sound.
Right. So then I, you know, when we finished with Paul, I went to pick up one of the other lines, and nope, they both hung up. So, you know, it's either feast or famine on the radio show.
It was something you said.
Yeah, well, it's probably my underarm deodorant. Okay. Well, what can we
once
do
once a
for
month,
you?
Whether you need it or not.
Well, no, once a year. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. It's the New Year's resolution.
Well,
I wanted to say, number one, I've now gotten Sunday nights off after about 2 years, and you're leaving on October 26th. We're going to miss you.
Well, I'm going to miss doing the show, but...
But you haven't been doing it for 6 years, almost.
Since April of 91.
Yeah.
More than 6 years. 6.5 years.
Well, I started listening to you... when I lived in Seattle, mm-hmm. and now I live here, and of course can hear you on the WWCR, but my question is about a couple of things. One, I have an old Yaesu FTDX 560, which I would like to get fixed. It does need some intricate repair as far as some capacitors, I think, need to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if anyone would have an interest in looking at that, and if that were the case, should I give my telephone number?
Well, I can give you the number and or of the guy that we have that we've had on our show a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and that's what he does for a living. His name is Randy Storaci.
Yep.
He's KE7TV.
Mm-hmm.
And his business is fixing radios, and he loves older radio. I mean, that's his specialty, he is an AM user. I mean, you know, he thinks if it doesn't glow, it doesn't work right. But, I mean, he's really into that. And you certainly can call him at area code 602-371-0555.
That's Randy.
Randy. And you want to call him during normal business hours, Monday through Friday. 602-371-0555.
Okay, this is a radio before the 101, I think, and I do have the a photocopy of the manual with it.
Well, of course, if you needed a manual, I know that W7FG vintage manual.
What a way to get into a commercial.
Well, you know, they're not currently sponsoring, but they did, and I'll still give Gary a plug.
You could do this too. You could say, you know, we don't want to dodge the issue, but
yeah,
and then get into the Dodge commercial.
Well, oh, that's true. I could do that. Well, you know, Ken is such a good friend of mine.
There you go. You see,
I can get in all. Yeah, you have some good segues there, right?
Well, you know, it's as easy as MFJ. I mean ABC.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're attempting to have the owner of MFJ on next week because he's celebrating 25 years. And let me tell you, Martin Jew is his name. He is a success story, and his father was in the grocery business, and it would be interesting just to listen to him on how he went from an almost nothing to what he does now, fully integrated. I mean, so many people are not aware that they actually produce all, they extrude the aluminum, they make the cases that all the, you know, the TNCs and everything go into. I mean, they make the cabinets. So they are really fully integrated. There are no other companies, and they're made in the United States.
That's right.
Something that is very unusual.
Products. All of them are great and well made.
Oh, well, they're going to have to send you some money.
You know, they sent me a wonderful catalog, which, of course, you can obtain, everybody, very, very quickly. And MFJ knows what they're doing. They've been doing it since 1972. It's a company that's well worth your consideration. It's very easy to catalog. Len, how do you do it?
Oh, well, I would call 1-800-647-1800. The thing is, it's not MFJ I need to sell on it. It's all the other guys. Martin and MFJ have been very good. They've been sponsors, and an Amateur Radio Trader magazine have certainly helped out. And let me tell you, 73 magazine used to help out a tremendous amount before they got rid of the guy who was running it. Wayne Green got rid of one of his men. I'd rather not go into the name and stuff, but got rid of the guy who was the number one guy. And until that time, we were doing very well with 73, and 73 was doing well. Now, if you look at 73 Magazine today, and since I don't have to worry about getting them as a sponsor since I won't be here after 3 more weeks, you know, the truth of the matter is they have one ham radio sponsor in their magazine. Otherwise, it's all cellular telephone. And all other, you know, some electric equipment, but no radio equipment. It's really a sparse magazine.
I wonder if they're starting to think about approaching the cellular phone market with a magazine.
Well, who knows? Wayne has had millions of magazines. He's done everything and anything. I mean, here's a man who absolutely knows for sure that we never went to the moon, And for sure, he has the cure for AIDS. All you do is stick a piece of wire in your body. So
that's right. Don't forget about the Earth, of course, being flat.
Well,
the people off the end of the Earth.
No. I've never heard Wayne say that he's a member of the Flat Earth Society. But it wouldn't surprise me. But even
right,
on
Wayne, we're talking about you.
Even on
the, hope you're listening.
He's one of the few guys who actively campaigned to run for vice president of the United States of America. So, you know, he didn't care who the president was. He just wanted to be the vice president. So,
but
he didn't
insult Murphy Brown, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, well, and he also believes that everybody can do cold fusion in their kitchen. So, you know, maybe you can. Who am I to say
that? If you have a big enough sink, I think that's the...
Well, something like that.
I do have one more question.
Sure.
And it is for Ed.
Ned.
I live in the probably worst part of the world that you can live in for good takeoff angles for signals on the HF bands.
Oh, I think we're worse here.
Wait,
in Arizona.
You're living in New England?
Yes. Well, I live in a valley in the lowest part of the town in the valley.
So
what I have to come up with, and of course I live in a place that I would not be able to put up a big tower.
And of course you became a ham after you moved there, because no rational.
I had a great location when I lived in Seattle, probably the second highest part in the city.
No, you were on Mount St. Helens, huh?
And it was great for 15 meters when 15 meters used to be a contender.
Okay.
I'm wondering if it would be good to put up some sort of a vertical antenna.
Well, probably doesn't matter. Well, you're in a valley, you say? I mean, what's the horizon?
Yeah.
What's the RF horizon? When you look around, how high do you have to clear to get over the mountains?
Well, I would probably have to clear...
like 5 degrees?
Yeah, I would think so.
Well, no antenna on HF actually really puts out much energy. I mean, let's say you have a three-element tribander at 60 feet. Its main lobe is going to be at around 20 degrees, so it's going to clear the mountains anyway. The mountains aren't going to block your HF signals much at all. So living in New England, you're at a much better advantageous location than where I am. You're like on 20 meters, you're two less hops to get to England or Europe than here.
Oh, they had wonderful DX coming in today from England.
I was on earlier today. I was on 12 meter band today, and I worked, all kinds of good stuff. Worked Gibraltar, I worked Senegal in Africa.
Today,
some really good.
Wow, I was playing table tennis.
Well, you got to pick your hobbies better.
That's right.
No, the bands are coming back. The in fact, yesterday I worked. I can't even, what's the name, XT2, Burkina Faso or whatever, it used to be Upper Volta, and I don't know what the name of that country is today, but that was coming through on 10 meters yesterday, which is, the bands are back. I'm excited. Of course, we still can't hear WWCR.
On the air and at least do some decent DXing if I can from my horrible location.
I wouldn't worry if you're... Unless you have blockage below 10 degrees or, down to 10, up to 10 degrees, it's not going to affect your signals much at all. You pretty much always need to see about, say, upwards of between 8 degrees and higher is all you ever really use. So having mountains around you doesn't really affect you that much.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get tropospheric ducting, like on VHF frequencies, you'll have troubles, but on HF it's not that low.
Now the gentleman who just called living on a lake, he might have good tropospheric.
If he's at the bottom of a large lake bed, then he's probably in a good position for tropo, for VHF tropo.
I wonder, there are great places to live for radio and terrible places. I wonder how certain points of Alaska would be.
Oh, Alaska has a big problem in that they have the auroral zone. Many times when the disturbance level is just slightly above zero, the auroral zone kind of engulfs all of Alaska, and they are basically isolated. They get no ability to propagate signals through that zone. So one of the problems living that far north is the polar ice cap, not the ice cap itself, but the auroral zone that seems to hang around both the Arctic and Antarctic regions.
What about Hawaii?
Hawaii is good.
I'll have to move there.
Yeah, try that. Yeah, Hawaii's good. Yeah, and where do you live? Where do you live in New England?
I live in a town called Charlemont, Mass., which is probably about 110 miles west of Boston.
Okay, well, that's still prime country for working in Europe. Man, you got it all over everybody out here in the West.
Oh, it certainly is. I was thrilled to work Japan and Hawaii when I lived in Seattle with one watt on 15.
Yeah, what will be fun in the next couple of years is working in Europe on 6 meters. Now, angle, but still, that'll be a wild time. I mean, that's going to be the neatest thing around. There's just going to be hundreds of thousands of guys on that band this coming cycle, and it's going to be a fun time up there.
I'd like to get this, as I said, going so I can work some DX.
Yeah, and it doesn't take a big tower. Far. Don't have to have an antenna very high. You can have a 10-foot over your roof, and you can do just about everything.
Yeah, it should be like a tri-bander, probably, huh?
Well, for six? No, they're, I mean...
No, for...
A tri-bander, from where you live, you'll have lots of fun. With just a shortened tri-bander work great.
Perhaps I'll work you on the air sometime.
Oh, yeah.
Or Len as well, if Len gets on HS.
Yeah, well, I get on it. I get on 10 meters.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I would get on the rest, but, you know, you got to change the FCC rules to make it more intelligent.
I got my code. That's one approach. I know I have mixed feelings. I know that a lot of the older hams want people to get their code, and as you get younger hams, I think there are new things that have to be addressed.
Listen, I've got only 3 more shows after this one. I'm not going to hold back. I might even say how I feel about the code.
Uh-oh.
All right.
We'll find out what you really feel about this.
Worldwide Christian Radio.
Not only that, but this is a family show.
That's right. Everyone's watching.
All right. So
call the radio.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that opens up our lines at 602-678-1234. 602-678-1234. Good caller. Now, how's 20 meters?
No, it's great.
Okay. MFJ has a 20-meter. Seriously. A 20-meter single sideband radio. Now, you know, every time I open up the MFJ catalog, I find they have something that I didn't know they had before. I mean, when you're talking about a catalog that has like 50 pages, or what do you expect? But they have a 20-meter, now, because you travel a lot, and this might be something you should have, a 20-meter single sideband travel radio. It's 12 watts, okay? It has a hot receiver, a potent speech processor. It's a rugged transmitter. And for $239 or less with the microphone, you can't tell me that's expensive.
No, not at all.
Okay. Now, they even have a 40-meter and a 75-meter radio available, of course, similar to my 6-meter that I have sitting right here. But you can turn on your new radio, okay, and you'll marvel at how well it performs for only $239 or less. The MFJ, it's just an amazing. Weak stations roll in with surprising clarity. On transmit, they have, you know, MFJ has their exclusive constant current speech processor, which cuts through noise and QRM like a far more powerful radio. So if you're looking to get into 20-meter sideband, and you want to do it really cheap, this is the way to do it. MFJ Enterprises, 1-800-647-1800. Okay, let's go to the phones. Who do we have?
You have WE1WEJ in Plainfield, Massachusetts, about 10 miles away from the previous caller.
Oh, we're hitting Massachusetts strong today.
Yeah, you get your signal's coming up. Listen, how about getting the somebody with a brain to tell us about 900 megacycles? Now, there's a repeater here, but it's very seldom used. Only 2 or 3 people use it. Is there available equipment? Now, some of them have built transverters. I have a ICOM receiver that receives it fine, but how do you get into 900? Or is it going to be used throughout the country? It may be
it's a very problematic band because, number one, we don't have exclusivity. We have secondary. They're using it for finding automobiles. More and more stuff is going to be done there. I know that they're talking about taking it away from us totally because that was a question at the Fort Tuttle Ham Fest that the attorney for the ARRL asked how many people use 900. Not one hand went up. Do you know of any commercial equipment even available for 900 megahertz? I don't know of any. There may be some, but I don't know of any. You know, what would you say, Professor?
I agree with everything you said. It's a real challenge. Not having it as a band available on HF or VHF multiband radios, to get there you need transverters, which is a significant investment. Plus, it's something which you buy, which only has value on that band. And we never know when we're going to move around, or you get set up and there's some service that pops up right next to you that makes it unuseful to you. So it's just doesn't seem to be of, if a guy had a buck to spend, he's not going to spend it on that.
No, you'd go to 1.2
yeah.
Before you would go to 900. I mean, based on what I heard, and I don't know this any more than just reading between the lines, I don't see us having 900 5 years from now.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. There is a repeater here, but there's three people that have radios for it.
What's big on it is ATV has picked up on it because of the availability of the wideband TVRO receivers. It doesn't take anything to tune them over to it. So that's has seen some utility, I know, here in the Phoenix area and some places. But even that, it's been kind of...
Because they're spending more on 2.3.
Right. Yeah.
So you think for UHF that 1,200, 1,240, 1,260 would be...
Yeah, that band is probably more likely to survive the next frequency grab that goes on, all the frequency grabbing that's going on.
Yeah, and the frequency grabs. That's why I was interested to see it, get hear comments from around the country. I know I have three people around here using it, but that's it.
Well, let's put that out, that if anybody out there is using 900... or if there's repeaters in your town, we'd love to hear from you.
It'd be a good band for hams to start working on spread spectrum, digital communication. In my mind, that's a perfect use for that. But yeah. I mean, because a lot of equipment's popping up, a lot of this CDMA stuff. Maybe there's a way to get ham modified for ham gear or frequencies.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and good luck, and all that good stuff.
Thanks for calling.
Bye bye.
Okay, 602-678-1234, 602-678-1234. Every time someone asks a question, it's amazing you just pour all this knowledge out. It's like it's oozing from every pore in your...
oozing. That's a good point.
602-678-1234. My good friend, Ken Nichols, WA7HXZ, he's the fleet director of Earnhardt Auto Mall. All you need to do is copy down this phone number, 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. Okay? 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. Give Ken Nichols a call if you're looking to buy a new vehicle. You know, you're only fooling yourself and hurting yourself if you don't call, because it doesn't cost you anything to call. Plus, you'll talk to a ham. You might have a question about radio, which he'll be happy to talk to you and schmooze about. But if you want to buy a vehicle, he'll give you that low price right there, right on the telephone. You don't have to sit there and haggle for hours and get you hit over the head with boiler room tactics like they do in most auto shops. I mean, who likes to go buy a car? You don't even like to buy a new car. They're terrible. They're like, you know, how much will you give me if you buy it today and all this nonsense? You deal with Ken Nichols, it's easy. And then all you have to do is go to your local dealer, pick it up. It's there waiting for you. Sign the sheet and you're driving home. Give Ken Nichols a call. He has sponsored the show from the day we started. 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. If nothing else, call him and tell him thank you for 6.5 years of support for the Ham Radio and More show. He really does support Ham Radio because of it. 1-800-497-8740, extension 580, Ken Nichols.
Hi, you're on Ham Radio and More.
Yeah, this is Fox in Oak Ridge, KF4ATA.
Oak Ridge is in?
Tennessee.
It is
said to glow.
Okay, where firecrackers are legal.
Where firecrackers are what?
Are legal.
No.
In Tennessee? Sure.
Well, maybe in Tennessee, but not in town.
Okay.
All right. So we sell tons of them to all the people who drive through.
Yes, see, I knew.
Florida to Canada.
See, because I used to drive from Chicago to Florida, and I'd pick up a brick or two.
All right. You anyway, gotta go through Tennessee.
That was in my old days when I was, you know, not as nice as I am now. But
yeah,
I didn't believe code should be required then either. Anyway, go ahead.
I haven't mastered it yet. I'm not sure I ever will.
All right.
But
well, neither has the professor. No, that's why he did RITI, because it does it for him, you see.
Somebody down here has a very inexpensive, I think $27, code gadget that I have on order. And you carry it with you and you listen to endless varied code. On and on, at any speed you want, up to 110 or something.
Okay.
I could use that. I could use a high-end code.
Yeah. I hope he hits. I'm not commercial for it, but I hope he hits it. Listen, I am watching the ham radio world that I'm very new to as a retiree. Just watching that they are becoming so discouraged over what seems to be the attempt to take frequencies away and the distraction of so many people to the great computer age. Let me just make a plug to any hams listening out there. The real thing they could do that would be great fun and great use is go to get to the high schools, even to junior high schools, and they know something about this electronics. Incidentally, I don't. I'm just beginning. But the old-timers and the middle-timers, and they can deal with computers and ham radio and try to get a ham radio computer club even. The schools have the computers, but they're not going to let the kids take them apart and put them back together again. I don't think so, anyway.
No, I don't think so.
And a club could. And ham radio is related to it, and the new higher frequency stuff is sitting around to be played with without worrying about that code. And this could be really helpful to kids. This is what I needed, I won't say how many years ago, but I didn't get it. And I got busy in between. But this kind of bringing real adults in, not bossy relationship to kids, is just such a great idea. And kids respond wonderful to it.
Well, there are, of course, a few teachers.
Quite a few around, yes.
There are a few teachers. Rosalie White does it. Carol Perry does it. Jim Furclough in New York does it. And they actually have the ham radio as part of the curriculum. So it is done in some schools, but certainly the penetration is minuscule.
Very slight.
And you know what? You know, you're right. And I won't deny that I'm discouraged in some ways because of the same thing that you said. The last show that we're going to do on the 26th, the professor will be here for that show. And we're going to talk a little about the future of amateur radio and the state of ham radio today. And you might be surprised that, he comes from a little bit different perspective than I do, you might find that we're going to be total different. And somewhere in the middle may be the actual state of amateur radio.
Yeah, but there's still an awful lot of it out there.
There is, but there could be so much more. Is the ARRL promoting to the extent that they should be? Are they doing all that they can be? Are they getting the new hams involved? Should there be another organization? Making competition always spurs a little bit of excitement and maybe some interest. Who knows what should be? I mean, here they are. Last year lost $500,000. This year, who knows what they're losing? And yet they're bragging that they have the largest amount of members in their history, and that they're all is right with the world. But something isn't right, and I think we'll explore that in 3 weeks on our last show. So people push it around, and everybody should be listening to that last show.
Here's to those guys who know the difference between a resistor and a condenser to get out and help kids learn. How else are they going to get really into the notion of doing computer except by going to school for it? And if they start as amateurs, they get a certain run on it. You can't get any other way.
Well, we do have Ned. He goes to different clubs and he tells people and he shares his knowledge. But I will say that there are a lot of old timers, and not that Ned is old, but he's been a ham for a long time. But here he's one who willingly and aggressively and enthusiastically shares his knowledge with others. He's coming here. He's not making any money, neither am I, really, for doing the show. But the point is,
hope you're not losing as much as the ARRL.
No, not to that extent, thank God. But anyway, but he's doing this. There are so many of his ilk that are knowledgeable DXers who are snobs, selfish, and he will probably admit this, who don't want to go out there and have anything to do with the new ham, have no intention of sharing their knowledge. And that is really something that is sorely lacking the old Elmers. Am I right, though?
Oh, yeah. That's something I've been saying for years, is that what's happened. I was attracted into ham radio by an Elmer. We should do everything we can to either be one or promote people to be one, them.
Yeah.
That's what's really missing. I know in this town we have an opportunity. We have a Arizona Science Center down here in downtown Phoenix.
Which has
a fabulous facility.
Club there.
There's a club station there, W7 Alpha Sugar Charlie, Arizona Science Center. And there are like about 28 or 30 regular operators. Unfortunately, I can't break time away during the week or on weekends to go down there because of family commitments and work. But there's a hardcore number of guys who go down there, guys and gals who go down there and operate throughout the week, showing amateur radio to children. It's constantly visited by schools, and it's one of the best shows down there. So
this is
at Phoenix, Arizona.
There's a couple more.
And that's an opportunity.
Science museum.
Yeah, it's like these hands-on interactive science museums. And so that's just one. I mean, it was a vision of a couple of guys here in town about 5 years ago to promote this kind of display. And it's panned out really well. It's been a big hit. But it might be an example for other communities to do the same, to try to communicate the hobby. I mean, it's something I've been trying to say lately. It's not just radio. It's communication, you know, and that can include computers. There's really nothing wrong with having a computer somewhere in the network of communication.
Let me tell you, more so than computers or radio and communication is communicating.
Yeah, that's right.
Their whole life is communicating. You can't be a businessman without being able to communicate. I'll never forget having Senator Barry Goldwater on my show a couple of times. I feel honored that, that I've had the opportunity to interview this gentleman. And he said that as much as the Air Force helped him, as much as being a senator and all the other things, that if he was not an amateur radio operator at the age of 13, that he may never have learned communication skills. And it's those that he learned being a ham, and whether it's on CW or voice, he was able to communicate and interact with other people because of amateur radio, and that is what helped him in his career and helped him to further his life, the ability to communicate with others.
There's another whole kind of possibility realm opening for amateurs if they'll grab onto it, and I hope they do, and I'll try to be part of it, and I wish them all luck, and I'll get off and let you have another call.
Well, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Lots of insight on that call.
That's a good call.
That's actually more very sad but true of what amateur radio is happening right now. Whether people like it or not, the hobby, the service, amateur radio is evolving. And you can't keep it in the Stone Age. It's got to evolve, and we are in 1997. We're going into only a few months from 98, and my God, time just marches on quickly. And we have to remember that there's competition today. There is so many other things vying for the young person. They can sit in front of TV. I mean, I'm not that old, but when I was young, the TV, we didn't have one. And then when we got one, it was a black and white that, you were lucky if you saw the picture, right? And, so...
I'm not that old, Lynn.
Well, yes, you are. And, yes, you are. When you were young, you had a black and white TV, too. There was no color TV. And then, things are a little different today, than they were back then.
Yeah, well, things are also changing faster than, when TV came in, it was black and white for years and years. Here cellular phones came out, and they were analog, and about 3 years later, now they're digital.
Yeah.
3 years from now, they're going to be completely something else. You can't stick with the same format if you mean in communication. We have got to change. We've got to adapt, or it'll become history.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that may be truer than you think. Okay, let's tell you about MFJ Enterprises, the MFJ 1798. You discussed about getting a vertical. Well, there is another company that makes a lot of antennas, very well known, and they make one that, is an R something, and it puts a lot of bands on one antenna, and it's $365 or more. MFJ has the antenna with 10 bands on one vertical antenna. Is that not good?
That's outstanding.
Okay, and it's only $269.95 or less. Okay? 10 bands, one antenna. Get this. No ground or radials. Okay? It operates 75, 80, 40, 30, 20, 17, 15, 12, 10, 6, and 2 meters. With one antenna, separate full-size radiators, and loading, elevated top feed, low radiation angle, very wide bandwidth, highest performance, no ground vertical ever made. Now, you know, you may have some, you know, reservations, you know, but then not everybody's the professor. But let me tell you, MFJ, if you're not satisfied, they have their forever, no, they're not their forever, but their no matter what warranty for 1 year. Your MFJ product comes with MFJ's famous no matter what 1 year unconditional warranty. That means they'll repair or replace your products no matter what for a full year. Now, that means you can remove your 47 antennas and you can put one vertical that will take care of it all. Not quite as good, I admit, because this is a vertical. You can't concentrate all your power like you can with a beam. But for a vertical, this is a darn good antenna. You guys out there, give MFJ a call. 1-800-647-1800. 1-800-647-1800. Also, just give them a call. Have them send you a catalog if you don't have one, free of charge. Mention Ham Radio and More when you call. Amateur Radio Trader Magazine. Do you get Amateur Radio Trader Magazine, Professor?
No.
Well, you certainly should. Because it has stuff about amplifiers. It has stuff about propagation. It has repeaters, Massachusetts repeaters, Tennessee repeaters, this gentleman who just called. I mean, all this information is in Amateur Radio Trader Magazine. Give them a call at 1-800-774-2623. 1-800-77-HAM-AD is their phone number. 1-800-774-2623. Comes out twice a month, loaded with stuff, loaded with information, loaded with stuff to buy and sell. And you, too, can sell your merchandise. If you're looking for a place to sell it, Amateur Radio Trainer Magazine. You know, I have people who say, oh, man, you know, I'm not going to sponsor on the Ham Radio and More show because no one listens. Well, you know, I got a letter, they sent it to WWCR, and then they forwarded it on to me, from a gentleman, Mr. Miles, in Newbury, London, England, who listens to the show, obviously, via shortwave, on his Sony SW7600. And what was he calling for? Not to say the show was, not. I mean, what was he writing for? Not to say the show was good, although, you know, he obviously liked it. But what he was interested in was the phone numbers and addresses for a couple of my sponsors, MFJ Enterprise and at that time Vintage Manuals. So for those sponsors out there who once in a while listen to the show, people do listen. And it's quite amazing the amount of following that we have generated in 6.5 years. Anyway, next week we're hopefully going to talk to MFJ. The following week, we're going to have some fun the following week. You don't want to give up on me yet because we're going to talk to Phil Anderson. And Phil has written a book called Crystal Set Projects, and we're going to talk about how to make a crystal set and different types. I think there's like 15 radio projects in his book that you can build.
My very first radio was a Boy Scout crystal radio set where they used a cat whisker and a Galena diode. It was my very first radio.
Can you still buy these things?
You can clearly make one out of just junk parts, but that's an interesting-looking book, actual project.
It has all the tools, like here, a low-budget set and transmitter set that you need from a Tinker Toy set, you know, 14, 10 and 3/4 inch dowels, 12, 2 and 8. Anyway, we're going to discuss this. I think this is going to be pretty neat. So we're going to do this on October the 19th. So don't miss that show. And tell everybody to listen to the 26th, because that's going to be our swan song. We're going to be our last show for Ham Radio and More. And I'm enthusiastic and excited about it, that it's going to be our last show. Give it our all. We're going to talk to the professor. He's going to be here in studio, and we're going to talk about the state of amateur radio. We want to hear from you that day. Tell us what you think the state of amateur radio is, what you think the future is going to be for amateur radio. Do you think in the year 2010 it will exist? If so, in what fashion will it exist? Will we have any spectrum? Will we be on the 467 gigahertz spectrum? Who knows where we'll be? Will we have some HF spectrum? Will 2 meters be a CB band where you don't need a license? Or will 11 meters be a ham band where you need a license? Or will we be able to use between 27.4 and 2800, because it seems like CBers are using it on sideband all the time? Supposedly it was a military frequency area, but you find all these CBers using 27.695, and they're all talking all over the world with who knows how many watts on 11 meters. So, you know, what state will amateur radio be in? Will there be any young people in amateur radio? Don't take this as racist, but will you be able to go to a ham radio club meeting and see other than a white, older, gray-haired gentleman there? Will more women get into amateur radio? Will more minorities get into amateur radio? Because, I mean, perfectly honest, they're not in it. I mean, you know, it's just not right. Why isn't everybody getting into amateur radio? It seems like it's a, you know, somewhat of a unique hobby service. I mean, do you disagree?
No, not at all. It is unique.
I mean, you go into a place, into a club meeting, and you, unless you have red hair, you see mostly gray hair, or you see no hair.
No hair.
And they're not Steve Austin from the World Wrestling Federation. Yes, I did work for them for 7 years. And now I'm into...
And there's a similarity here, Bob.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I have a lot of hair, so you know, there's no way I'm similar to Steve Austin's haircut. But anybody who listens to the show got to admit, we've had a lot of fun, and we'll have a lot more fun in the next 3 weeks. And we certainly hope you'll be back in 3 weeks
for
the final show.
Looking forward to that show.
And I thank you for being here today and putting
pleasure.
A sense of reason and a brain into the mix of what's going on. And we really had some good calls,
unusual calls.
Stuff. So, we want to continue that. Next week, like I say, I know what we're shooting for. Hopefully we have that. If not, it may be open lines with just me. If I'm here by myself, I may tear another entrance to something, you know. So we'll have to see what happens next week. But I certainly enjoy doing this show and having fun and talking up amateur radio. And hopefully, if you're on the verge of becoming a ham radio operator or a shortwave listener, please become a ham. Thanks, Professor AA7A. I'm Len Winkler, KB7LPW. I want to thank everybody for listening. 73, and we're QRT.